Hello, welcome to the Owen Podcast. My name is Keith Smythe, and Owen Podcast is Outwear's podcast all about me. No, the mobile industry. And I'm joined here today not by Peter Talbot. He's not here, so we just lost most of our listeners. I'm joined by three people who are much smarter than me and can talk to me about things that I know nothing about. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about not just apps that are on your phone. We're talking about apps that are not on your phone. It's the server side. The very interesting, fun server side. This is fun when there's no one to riff off. You guys can just jump in anytime and I'll introduce you. It'll be fine. So I will introduce the round. First of all, we have two new faces and one old face. So I'll start with the old face, Mr. Alex Gvozdik. Welcome.
Hello.
Did I murder your last name?
Duh.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Alex.
Better than most, I'd say.
Alex started off as an iOS developer. Then you decided, no, iOS is not for me. I'll do Android. And now you've decided, no, Android's okay, but now I'll do middleware development or server-side development. Yeah?
Yeah, it's good. A little bit of a thing that I've started as wanting to be an Android developer, but there was just not enough market for it.
Yeah, not enough market for iOS.
Just kidding.
That other voice you hear is our middleware developer, Mr. Jerem Waters. Welcome, Jerem.
Hello, Internet.
Hello. Yeah, we are talking to the Internet. Good morning, USA. Yeah, welcome to your first show. You're actually the newest person here as well, so we must welcome you in that way as well.
So much shiny, hey?
Yeah, you've completed your 3-month probation. Now you're on the podcast. That's it. Straight in. And the fourth voice you haven't heard yet is Mr. Branko Minic. Welcome.
Yeah, mini me in the house.
Mr. Mini Me Minic. Branko is a Android / middleware developer. I think the / is good, yeah?
Yeah, the / is good.
Is it a forward / or a /
Ooh, yeah, where does your...
We work on Macs. We live in a Unix world. Screw Windows.
It's a forward / right? No? /, yeah. Windows had it right. Forward / all the way. Ooh. I'm just stirring it up. It's much
words.
More fun. So as I said, we're talking about servers, middleware, and what your app talks to. You know, my app doesn't work when I'm not on the internet. Why is that? Well, what's going on? What's happening behind the scenes? So, it's interesting. So, so who can explain to me, probably Jerem, what is middleware? What am I talking about when I'm saying middleware?
I'll have a shot at that. So, in very basic terms, you're on an app, you want to log in, you want to get your Facebook, you want to get your Twitter, you know, all of those things.
You've got the Facebook, you've got the Twitter.
They've got to live, all of that data has to live somewhere, and preferably you don't store all of the Twitterverse on your phone at all times.
Now, I thought I had the whole internet on my phone. Is that not correct?
Not correct. Imagine like a distributed Twitter that was like decentralized.
D-Twitter.
That would be weird. So, yeah, when your app is... This is a good way of describing it. When mm-hmm. something is not working and your app is not updating, that's when you notice the middleware. Middleware is what you notice when it's not working.
It's like a good support staff. It's just you only notice it when it's not there. So it's the server. It's where all the data comes from, and it's what your app talks to get the data. It's
that's
the internet
right.
almost.
It's definitely the server, the internet side of the, you know, the client-facing app that you've got in your pocket or on your wrist, if you're lucky enough. And
ooh. My wrist. Yes, Alex is wearing an Android Wear watch today.
And I love it.
I'm going to count how many times you refer to it today, actually. So that's one. And I'm going to try and keep count. Hang on, I'm just going to write down one. There we go. Excellent. So middleware is the server. It's what your phone is talking to, what your app is talking to. There we go. I've put one in my document now. So, where did this all start? Like, originally, we had just had computers, and they were just desktop applications, I suppose, and they were just talking to them, their own little servers and everything. And eventually, kind of the internet, and I'm going way back now.
I guess if you go really way back, then the middleware was
terminals.
The original.
Yeah, you had dumb terminals that were talking to mainframes, and the mainframe would have been your middleware, essentially, back in the day.
So, and so many times IBM tried to bring thin clients, you know, hard driveless computers to the world. I think, you know, Commonwealth Bank and a few of those guys, you know, larger entities probably tried it, put all your processing on a mainframe and then just push that data down to the client. Obviously, that didn't really hit the critical mass until we all start walking around with a phone in our pocket.
Now we all have dumb terminals that have very little storage of their own.
Three.
And now it's a huge dumb terminal with a pen. A Galaxy Note 3 is a phone with a stylus pen. Like talking history, right? So it started off with kind of you'd have your big mainframe servers with dumb terminals, and the mainframe server would have all the knowledge and smarts and things. And sort of as we come through time, where what happens, kind of how did it evolve into what it is today?
Well, I think, was it Intel or IBM who said that they were going to sell like 5 computers a year or something? And then got it horribly wrong.
Yeah, it turns out it was like 6 or 8.
Yeah.
It was a little
billion.
Bit more.
Billion, one per person kind of thing.
Sorry, billion, yeah.
So at some stage, the PC came to play, and that put all the processing on everybody's, desktop, as it were. You still needed middleware servers, though. They were there in the background doing their thing. It's not just storing data. It's kind of... any kind of online specialty processing that you want to do. You want to do video rendering. You can have like specialty speech recognition, all your analytics and measurements, how well is your website working, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And syncing services, like your Evernote and anything like that if you use them. Mm-hmm. All of that needs to go somewhere and have, it needs to be munged. Needs to have things done to it.
Munged. What is that?
Oh, it's when you put like data in here and data in here, and then something else comes out the other end.
And that's munging.
Also known as mashing.
Yeah.
Some sort of transformation type service. A and B comes in and C comes out.
Yeah, I like to call wielding magic.
Magic. A and B comes in, black box. C comes out. So the sort of the need kind of arose for middleware to become more ubiquitous and like more out there when a lot of computers started appearing here and there, and it was much more distributed then. Like originally there was one computer and a bunch of people would use that one computer, and there wouldn't really be too much of a need for kind of a server side, kind of middleware side. But now everyone has their own computers, and even now everyone has their own phones and Android Wear watches. How I got there before you did, Alex. And
one for me.
And from the need of the way the industry's kind of been evolving, is kind of middleware has had to evolve as well.
I don't know if it was a...
Is that a fair statement?
I don't know if it was a push from the client side needing more middleware. In some ways, I think you could sort of look at it the other way, that the opportunity arose, faster connection speeds, which means that, if you're going to push some processing off your device, mobile started with very low... capabilities, so that kind of made more of a push in that angle.
Low bandwidth, low memory, anything.
Well, also low bandwidth, but as the bandwidth goes up, then it's cheaper to do things on the server side and then push them down to the device or the computer as well. And also the other thing that changed was the cost of hosting, having a hosted computer, which mm-hmm. In itself has just been a complete revolution over the last 5 or 10 years. From having a visit from a senior BD person who'd come in and, you'd sign off 24-month contracts and get your rack computer set up, hardware, to now, running a couple of commands on your, on a command line or jumping on a dashboard and firing up, as many computers as you need.
So that's like
all on the weird, wonderful cloud.
On the cloud. So let's talk a bit about the cloud and where middleware and server side is at today. Kind of what kind of offerings have we got? Like, say I'm writing an app and I need some kind of middleware server support for my app. Where do I go? What do I do? Like, what sort of options do I have?
It is crazy out there.
It is crazy.
Oh my god!
I suppose there are a few massive players out in the market. That will host your machines for you. People like Amazon.
Like Google Cloud.
Google's the other one. IBM, I guess, would be another.
Windows,
Azure.
There's a new one, I think, Heroku as well.
Heroku, yeah. So you've got Heroku? That's where you really get into your specialty hosting. But then you're still talking about websites. If you want to talk about like application services, then you've got like your video rendering and those kind of things that I mentioned before, and then you know, all of those emails that are getting blasted out every day, you know, hopefully not spam, you know, all of this stuff, you know, the hosted application space is purely a middleware play.
Mm-hmm.
So all these vendors, they'd essentially have a group of servers that you can essentially rent out at a minimal fee for a base setup, and you whack on your middleware app on there and essentially be hosting to the world just straight up.
So do you think it's more of a like you're purchasing just a machine, a blank slate type machine thing, or is it more towards I need a database or I need something that'll host my RESTful API?
Essentially, it's just the service that
service oriented now.
It's coming from, I suspect guys just come together. They know a lot of knowledge about servers and RECs and kind of data, and they just have a lot of them. And they think, why don't we just offer it as a service to people and, you know, order, give them flexibility of having, you know, I want 2 gig of memory now, but I might have like 5 next year, or my business goes down, I might downgrade back again. And these companies, they give you this flexibility. They say, okay, rent as much as you want, pay as much as you rent for, you know, rent. And it's just, I think it's just an awesome market there as well.
So that's an interesting point you make about the scaling, how it will not only just scale up when you need more people to come on, and as a customer who's purchasing this service that's on a server somewhere, you don't need to worry, apart from, you know, your wallet, about when it scales up and goes out of control. But you can
slash
also...
Slashdot effect.
What's it called?
The slashdot effect.
Ah, you'll have to explain that? This effect.
Wow.
Was that a website?
I just suddenly feel old.
What's a slashdot there, Tommy?
So before Hacker News, there was slashdot. And Slashdot had a peculiar effect where if you got to the front page of Slashdot, it was a voting engine,
mm-hmm.
like Reddit, you know, these sorts of things.
Like your Reddits,
pre-Reddit though. And and so people would report that getting to the front page of Slashdot would make their hardware, like their server, melt. Yeah, and you'd go offline just when you most needed to be online.
Actually, I think, yeah, there's any kind of news aggregator that does something like that, or anything that has a lot of people at it can essentially, just by mentioning something, create a distributed denial of service attack on any type of person who's not suspecting or isn't scalable. Really, because I remember reading a Penny Arcade thing a while ago, and you think it's just a web comic, but they have millions of viewers, and they mentioned something that they thought was cool by name, and everyone went to the website and DDoS'd it, and the whole site went down. So now they have, I can't remember if they tried to sue or not. They say, hey, you took our site down, basically, just by getting everybody to go to their site all at the same time, which is quite interesting. So now they warn people. They say, hey, we're going to mention your site next week. Maybe, you know, you could be prepared.
We had I used to work in a small startup. We were doing publishing-related stuff, like book publishing-related stuff, like supporting information on mobiles. One of the authors, it was one of the – I'm not really – that au fait with this sort of stuff, but hip-hop artists not even hip-hop, R&B.
Now you sound old.
I'm down with the hip-hop, but R&B, not into it. This guy, he mentioned his book and our server fell over on Twitter. He had like 2 million Twitter people and all of them wanted to see what he was talking about at one time. So, yeah, just one person can do it these days.
Too many GET requests, server fall down.
Because we didn't have a cloud server then.
Ah, so if you had a cloud server and you had scaling, it would scale up. It wouldn't go down. In theory, it wouldn't go down.
It can help,
but it might cost you lots and lots of money.
Well, it shouldn't necessarily need to. I mean, it's nice if they tell you beforehand because you can add some nodes, but even... AWS, like Beanstalk and, you know, these sorts of things.
Yeah, they've got the auto-scaling option as well.
Auto-scaling still takes a little while. So you'll drop a few hits on the way out.
So AWS would be Amazon Web Services, which is Amazon's offering.
Yep.
And right. Beanstalk, would you explain Beanstalk? I don't know who offers it.
Elastic Beanstalk is
an Amazon service.
Scalable.
Ah, Elastic, yep.
It's kind of an environment you set up and that you set up some auto-scaling in it. It's just a kind of fast ramp up thing just created
very
quickly.
Elastic, as its name suggests, the Elastic Beanstalk side of things. It allows for the expansion and contraction of your servers. So if you need more, it'll automatically add servers and put your app that's currently running on one particular server, put it on the new server, and that way you've just got more nodes to play with, therefore allowing more people to actually access it without your servers actually dying.
So where do the giants and the magic beans come in? With
the giants and the magic beans?
And the singing harps.
Well,
I'm just trying to remember the children's book now. The giant is the Amazon guy at the back. I won't do that. So we're mentioning cloud a lot, and you always hear about, oh, it's in the cloud and cloud this. And I think Apple have coined the term iCloud because they have. Google are probably going to call something Android Cloud because all their new offerings have the word Android in front of it. They'll rename it.
Watch. Not A.
A Cloud.
A Cloud.
A Cloud.
A Phone. Could have been G Cloud.
Google made A Bomb. So what do we mean when we say cloud in kind of general terms?
I saw a great photo of the cloud the other day. It said, "This is the cloud." And oh. What it looked like?
A cloud?
A server room.
But that describes it, doesn't it? It's servers that you can connect to over a network, which we often call the internet.
Yeah. But yeah. Essentially, the cloud is just the unknown. You know, there is a server out there somewhere, like clouds are out there in the big blue sky.
Do you guys know where the cloud, the terminology came from?
Final Fantasy VII?
No.
Oh.
No, not even close. So when you're drawing a diagram, you've got like Office A, Office B, and you're going to connect them together.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, the kind of standard way to represent the internet was to draw like a fluffy, circle-y kind of a lumpy
often
thing.
Often with a lightning bolt coming out of it as well, if you were cool.
Yes. No? You had a cooler internet.
No.
Than you. And so this, you know, was referred to as the cloud, just meaning the internet. But then suddenly, you know, people who don't do technical diagrams started hearing about this cloud thing and they were like, where can I get some of this cloud?
And that became the term for it.
The marketing name.
I actually thought it was the other way around. Like everyone was calling it cloud, so that's how we drew it. But, oh, so it came from the diagrams where
Well, it came from the fact that your wires go into the wall and then they come out of the wall at the other office.
Yep.
And something happens in the middle. We're not going to worry about drawing that. We'll just draw a cloudy shape there and, you know.
We don't know where rain comes from other than the fact that it comes out of a cloud.
It's like your plumbing. It's like, I know the water goes down the sink. I know there's a pipe in that cupboard. And then the pipe goes out of the wall.
Into the cloud.
Into the plumbing cloud. And then the toilet flushes into the plumbing cloud as well. My laptop lost internet. It's trying to connect to the cloud. It's a little bit of information on how the sausage is made. We use Google Docs. I'm just turning things on and off. Okay, so yeah, that's the cloud. So, I mean, why is middleware important? Why do we care? Why does the user need to know what middleware is? Why should they listen to us?
They don't, really.
They don't need to know?
Yeah, well, like as I said,
until it doesn't work.
You're only really doing your job when people don't know that there is some middleware there. Mm.
They just, I think
their
it's
app is slow. It's one of those thankless tasks. When your app is slow, when your data is wrong, or
you get a something went wrong error.
Your Netflix isn't working, or worst of all, you get one of those emails saying, there has been a compromise to your account. We apologize for this. We're pretty sure nothing got taken. Middleware failure.
I think there's a pretty big implication on security with middleware, isn't there? Because there's so much data and personal information and plumbing going up into the cloud now that it's kind of a really centralized point of attack now, isn't it?
Right.
Like there's not too much point in sort of trying to skim the surface of a phone's RAM or of a hard drive of a phone.
Unless you're
there's
looking
very
for
little
photos.
In there.
that's how the social engineering.
Well, actually,
when a celebrity posts a photo of themselves online, usually it's not them that's posted the photo.
Yeah, actually, a lot of those celebrity photos has been their phone has been backing it up to the cloud automatically. I think the Scarlett Johansson one. Not that I would know particular details about
you heard
that.
About it, though.
I heard about it, and I read about the news articles. Mm. It's not worth it. The Scarlett Johansson one was that her phone was backing the photos up to some sort of cloud service, and people are making gestures, and someone hacked that cloud service and managed to and got access to everybody's photos, but then, you know, look for famous names.
Yep.
I think.
So middleware can be a weak point as well as a strength in a business, and that's why it's so important to really get it right.
Yeah. So how do you get middleware right security wise? What sort of things do you need to think about?
Wow.
It's a,
wow. You know,
in general terms.
I've got 2 minutes.
Yeah. I've got a good one.
Well, I don't know. It's interesting. Every time they hack, it's different. So you've got to be ready for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I get like this little email every day, LogWatch, and it tells me how many people have attacked my boxes that day.
How does it know someone's attacked your box?
Because it can see. Because it counts how many times there's a password that's incorrect or how many times mm-hmm. they've gone for a PHP MyAdmin script or, you know, something like that. There's a lot of standard sort of hack techniques. The best way is to turn everything off. You know, they can't hack it if it's not running.
Turn the cloud
unplug
off now.
Best security, no security, no cloud.
Well, you know, you just leave on what you need to have on. But, you know, you will get 10 or 15 hack attempts a minute.
Wow,
it's just
really?
Happening all the time. Oh, yeah.
And is your...
All the time.
And the larger the corporation, essentially, the more attacks they
surface
get.
Surface area.
So yeah. Someone like Google... will have
they would have
obviously has a lot of cloud
potentially a minute.
Wow. At some point does it just government. Become noise? And
well, I think in most cases what these larger companies do is they fend off, you know, with multiple firewalls and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
and they essentially allow them to crack into a certain section of
mm-hmm.
of their system, but it's a nothing.
Oh, so it's like
a honeypot.
A honeypot, yeah. So a honeypot is—it's like a—they put something up that looks like it's full of good information, and
yep.
and they spend all their time cracking and getting into that, and it's just—it's all fake.
In the meantime, you've been reverse look—you know—reverse lookups on their IP addresses and tracing them back to China, and making an official complaint, which does you no good.
Good luck getting to me. I'm behind 7 firewalls.
Canada have just officially like put themselves on the official China Stop Hacking Us list. Along with
that's a list, is it? So tell me more about this list. I'm interested now. So there's a lot of governments yeah. and foreign countries and things all kind of trying to get into each other's data.
Right.
It sounds worse than what it is, isn't it?
It's amazing stuff. Like it's a wild world out there. The US and Israel writing viruses to infect Iranian nuclear power plant facilities to make their centrifuges not work a little bit, so they weren't aware that they were hacked.
Oh,
they
wow,
just
really?
Work out why they weren't getting any plutonium coming out the end.
Oh, so it's so they get in, just be all subtle.
Yeah. it's a complex, wild place.
I need to check my plutonium generation centrifuge.
Yeah, just to make sure it's going. You might have Stuxnet, mate. That'll always do it.
There's so many words that I just want to stop you and be like, define all these words. But if I did that, we'd run out of time entirely.
So back to doing middleware properly. Yeah.
How do I middleware?
You shouldn't need to know about it if you're the average user.
Well, the way the average user can see it usually is every time you see a beautiful spin in the middle of your screen, you can assume that most of the time that's what the app is doing. It's loading a fresh set of data to display in the app.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a nicer way for user to see it other than crashing and
it's not just being slow because your phone's no good or anything. It might be slow because your telephone network's really bad and it's trying to transfer information.
These days 4G is really good at that, but sometimes it does get slow if it's too much.
I mean, I have a phone that doesn't have 4G, so
why, Lord?
He's still living in the 70s.
Talking about the...
Don't you guys have a rotary dialer on your phone? No?
Can
you get that?
Sometimes it feels that way.
Can I get that dialer? On my note?
If you can't, I'm going to write it. And,
we need that app stat.
Hang on, you guys talk amongst yourselves. I'm looking something up in the Google Play Store.
But when you do the rotary dialer, it has to take all of that time to go back around to where it used to go. Otherwise,
just sure you can make an app like that. Just the permission of calling in Android. And he just did touch.
Could you do like an Android 70 skin with like lava lamps?
There really are.
Pulse dialing, no tone dialing.
Yeah.
I've just looked up rotary dialer in Android and there's 109 hits.
Only 109.
I'm scrolling on the page and they're all actual rotary dialers. Like,
wow.
I thought this was a brand new fresh idea and I was going to implement it and be the first.
That's the thing with the internet, isn't it? Anytime you think of something, someone's already selling it.
10 people have already done it.
The only thing you need one of those... headsets with it that look like an actual telephone.
Well, maybe we
I've seen one of those. Oh, yeah, they plug into the phone. Guy just carries around this handset that looks like one of those old school gondola looking handsets.
And those are really good for slamming down. It's like, no, Jensen, you're wrong. Bang.
Don't break your screen every time you put it in your rotary now.
Actually, it's really great for him to work hands free. This is silly. But hands free, he can nestle it against his shoulder, which is a bit hard when you've got
a flat
little mobile phone. So he does it with this big handset and he feels normal-ish.
We have to make phones bigger.
Oh, God.
Bigger.
We should tell the viewers that Jerem has a Galaxy Note 3,
yes,
which is just the biggest.
Huge. The size of
a tablet.
It's a phablet.
It's a phablet. A phone and a tablet. I have a Nexus 10, and it pales in comparison. It's nowhere near as big. So
I caught up with my dad on the weekend, and when you turn his phone sideways, it's as wide as my phone is. His phone's as long as my phone is wide.
Oh, God. What's going on? So we mentioned about transferring data over the airs a little while back, and I put a little mental note in there. What are some ways that we can transfer data over middleware? Like, what are some communication kind of... How do we get data over there? Like, I'm a phone app. I say, hey, give me the football scores for last week. How do I get these scores back?
So,
historically,
should
we start there?
Let's go historical.
Way back in the day.
First, there was the stone tablets.
Come forward a little bit.
Then we had fire.
And everything was good for a time.
We had fire and smoke.
Let's start from computer age.
So, once distributed computing became more of a big thing, I know I worked on a project way back in the day. IBM had released a tool called Interchange Server, which was a method of actually translating data from different formats into a readable format for the app that you were working on.
Some kind of more global format, was it? Or
yeah, well, whatever you would be expecting to use. So, for example, you could be connecting... if my app was to get the footy scores, and this we're talking about a middleware side. So,
did they have football back then, Grandad?
They did. They did indeed, young whippersnapper. So I would create a server that would then, you know, run through Interchange Server asking, say, the AFL for the footy scores. Now the AFL might send it back in XML, it might send it back in, you know, binary or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some weird concoction of a language. And Interchange Server's whole thing was it would change this business object that the AFL was sending.
Mm-hmm.
It would connect to it, talk to it, get it, translate it into what I'm expecting. Let's call it, you know, JSON, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd send that back down to the phone.
XML maybe.
Well, back in the day, possibly, because Jason wasn't around back then. But
who wants to define Jason?
These days, it's a lot simpler. We have, you know, mappers that just work quickly. And it's more of a standard around transferring of data. So there are two main standards currently, mm-hmm. which are XML and JSON. But they're not the only ways that data can be transferred.
I'm going to throw some define this things for me. So, Alex, can you define XML?
So, it's just a markup language, really. It's, you know, like very similar to what you see inside the web page. If you look inside, it's like tags and mm-hmm. namespaces. And it just brings a little bit of a structure so you know what you're dealing with. It has a forced, like, you know, structure that you can read easily pass on your out server or in server. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But 10 points. 10 points.
These days, we tend to use JSON more. It's coming from what's called JavaScript object notation. So it's a little bit
JSON.
Yeah, it's just
why we all call it JSON.
It's a bit less noise in it.
Less verbose, isn't it?
Yeah, less verbose, less data involved.
Mm-hmm.
That's much, much simpler.
So when it comes down to it, they're both text. We're just sending text,
yeah, they're
really,
both, they're
across
both essentially
the line.
Text.
Yeah.
And that's what you read, like, in footy, there'll be, like, scores in numbers sending around, and you just pass it and find out
How many goals are scored? How many points are scored? How many behinds?
Who's
the goal scorer is?
Instagram will send you a list of URLs, you know, of images that your friends have uploaded.
Uh-huh.
So then your phone can hit refresh. The server will send you back saying, here's 10 new images, download the images, and then you're glued on your phone for another 5 minutes.
In which time, 10 more URLs come along.
Exactly.
So JSON and XML, really good for sending text and data type things. How do I send an image across the cloud?
Image turns around and can be formatted into... you can do it one of two ways. You could either embed the image in that text, and so with bits and bytes, you just need to you just need to translate it. But the other way that you tend to do it is send through a URL saying, this is the URL where the image is located. Go get it yourself.
But if you go get it yourself, how does it come down then? Into the nuts and bolts.
Interweb.
You know. The interweb?
Interweb.
Standard HTML protocol.
Capable of handling images like a normal everything.
Mm-hmm. A normal everything.
A normal web page.
I love it. I love coining terms over podcasts. It's like a normal everything. Exactly.
Alex is our term mint.
There's another term. Okay, so let's say I want to develop a web service. Let's say I'm no longer a user, I'm a developer, because I can do that. It's fun.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Yay. So what kind of options do I have for if I want to develop my own kind of web service or something that's going to live in the cloud and talk to different apps and different
things? How long is a piece of string?
Well, firstly, you maybe would want to define what a web service is. It's exactly the same as what, you know, your online app. If you had an online application for sending out information about widgets, all different kinds of widgets, and so someone could go to the website, they could say, I need a gold widget, you know.
Oh, I could go a gold widget.
4 to 5 feet long. These are big widgets.
That's a big widget.
How large is the widget? That's a lot of gold.
Maybe we should go down to a silver.
I should just let you know they're gold-colored widgets.
It's just like a plating type thing. Yeah.
Bugger. Is anyone else feeling like typing in gold widget right now to see what comes up?
Just derailed you so badly. So let's say I'm running a RESTful web service and someone can define RESTful for me. I'm not the subject matter expert, so I get to tell other people to define things for me.
So
that's a big thing these days, isn't it? Like when you're talking cloud and web service and things.
REST is a big thing. Instead of defining your own kind of crazy business logic via SOAP or something like that, to interact with your server, why not use good old HTTP? HTTP has a bunch of well-known verbs, get for receiving some data, send me some data, get, post, I want to create something, put, I want to update something, and delete.
Guess what?
So
I no longer want this widget.
REST, it's not a technology, it's just a convention. Let's just do this a simple way. Let's just use the underlying technology of HTTP rather than going and everybody creating their own, hey, here's my SOAP service and here's a WDSL to work out how it's going to go. And you're like, no, please, REST.
So it's, let's not all keep reinventing the wheel.
Yep.
Here's a wheel and we're going to call it REST. And it uses existing things that are already out there and it's much easier. Okay, so let's say I want to make a RESTful web service. What kind of options do I have? For example, like languages I can write this in.
You can use anything that you can use to make a website. So just on the thing HTML? I was saying before, if you're going to make a website about widgets, then all you have to do instead of returning HTML is start returning JSON, and you have a RESTful web service. So it's a very simple kind of a thing to, like, generally you run them off the same business logic. You literally just have two different endpoints or put .json on the end of your requests, and there's your web service. In terms of the technology, we would use Java Spring if we were doing a very large financial services application.
Which we have.
Which we've just done.
Yes.
Go us. Go out there.
It worked with Java and it worked with Spring.
Ruby on Rails is very popular these days. I think because there's a lot of functionality out of the box. So you spend less time...
It's very quick to get something up and running.
You spend less time getting Facebook integration working and more time getting your business logic up and running. And, you know, get to market.
I always find that the Facebook integration is the worst part of development.
They keep changing everything. So, you know, there's that.
Hey, Facebook, make it the same.
PayPal. PayPal are the worst. They have two conflicting sets of documentation. One on, like, developer.paypal.com and one, guess. X.com.
X.com?
X.com.
That's a web address you can go to?
That's Elon Musk's web address that got bought by PayPal.
Wow.
And then he got 30% of PayPal.
Uh-huh.
And then PayPal sold to eBay, and then he became a billionaire.
X.com. Look at that.
For Mars.
Forward straight through.
Who are we? Inc. We are. We provide a robust platform where merchants of all sizes can. Ah, it moved. Can compete, and buyers and sellers can connect. Sounds like PayPal. I didn't even know you could. Oh, it redirects to ebayinc.com. Mm. There we go. So there's Ruby on Rails. There's Java, Spring. There's the Microsoft technologies.
There's .NET. Yeah.
.NET, MVC.
MVC.
Which is where I came from.
Lots of web services written in PHP, Symfony, those kinds of things. Obviously, Cake and Zend and all those, but you can write your own. Just any kind of web technology that, you know, floats your boat. You can spin up a web service.
Yeah, anything that is currently being used and possibly not can be used.
And all these, are all these scalable?
Absolutely.
For example, I write my app and I send it to the Elastic Beanstalks, and a million people decide to go and visit my Elastic Beanstalk at once. Is it easy to write something that's scalable that'll scale out to multiple machines?
Necessarily writing at that location. The issue that you have with scaling is when you write a monolithic application. So Tumblr and Twitter and all these guys, Tumblr did it in PHP. Twitter did it in Ruby and Rails.
Didn't Twitter have a lot of problems at first with scaling?
Tumblr also had problems with scaling. Yeah. So it's not really the technology that you're using necessarily. It's the way that you've written it. When you write, you know, if you get one file and put all your code in it and then try and run it off one server, that's going to be really hard to scale.
It's hard to scale one server.
It's hard to scale something that runs on a single server.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go and look at Tumblr, if you go and look at Facebook runs on 10,000 servers. Tumblr runs on 1,000 servers. The way that you do that is you split your application up into little tiny services. We talked about this before, service-oriented architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So you take your, you know, a like button is going to get sent to a different server to a, you know, friend request.
Mm-hmm.
So you break your code up into little tiny bits and put it across all different servers. And then you can scale up, you know, the servers as they need to go.
You can just add more servers to handle all those like button presses.
That's right.
Mm. Yeah.
And also you want small services essentially. So each little function that you do is a single service. So mm-hmm. if you break it up in such tiny little chunks, each request that comes through to do your work for you can go to anywhere. And you've got to try to make sure that your service is doesn't maintain state, so it's completely stateless. That way, scalability then just, you know, is a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. The more stateless you can make it, the better off you are.
Yeah, so it doesn't need to rely on some...
If you keep all the state in the database and say one database, so even with one kind of monolith deployment thing, you can deploy it on multiple computers, make it have a balancer that hits them one after another, so it doesn't hit uh-huh. the same server every time. As long as they point to the same database and they don't store the state on the server itself, it will still scale to a degree.
I guess the other thing that's changed, as we said, you know, just rolling back to what we were talking about before, you used to go and sign up a 24-month contract to get a server or a couple of servers in your local server farm, and you know that would probably have made you less inclined to go and get 10 boxes to run, you know, some distributed or, you know, service-oriented architecture style of coding. Whereas now, you can spin up 10 computers at $15 a month each. You can get a DigitalOcean virtual machine for $5 a month.
And DigitalOcean? Is
Digital
that a...
DigitalOcean, yeah.
What's that?
They have droplets.
Oh, God.
That's where the cloud reigns.
I have so much to learn.
DigitalOcean is like a, you know, it's one of these newer API. You've got your computer in 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose from a number of different flavors. You can say, I'm doing a Ruby on Rails app.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing a PHP thing or I need Java or, you know, whatever it is.
I want a .NET runtime with a SQL back data.
If you can drive Facebook, you can make cloud computing go. Did I just give that away?
We can make it go. Uh-oh.
Now everyone knows what I do all day. Facebook, cloud computing.
And the rest of the time, Gerald spends just reading the news.
Hacker news.
So Jerem doesn't work for us anymore. actually, I think you showed us some PHP stuff and we were like, ooh. Pretty cool. All right. So to sort of wind down a little bit and finish on a bit more of a light kind of topic, we were talking a little bit before about our current phones, and we're in that kind of area in phones where we're waiting on the next round of phones to come out. We're waiting on the iOS 8 phones. We're waiting on the next round of Nexus phones, and we're all kind of speculating on what's going to be on there and what we want. So I'm interested in going around the table and completely go cloud, go wherever you want. What sort of feature do you want on your next phone? And who wants to go first? I think Branko Minić.
I'll go first. I'm developing Android, but yet I have an iOS phone, an iPhone.
Something which I bring up with you every day.
Yes, I have my head in shame at the minute. But so I'm looking at an Android phone at the minute, one that can actually receive phone calls in my bedroom, which currently has a black spot apparently, which has never been there until probably 6 months ago.
So you're looking for like magic reception?
Yes, yes.
Works in a Faraday cage?
Well, works in any cage.
I had an issue when I was, I think I was on an Android phone though. I was up in Coburg. You know where Coburg is? It's like really far out of town. So no Optus coverage. It's too far away. And so I complained bitterly to Optus about how, you know, I'm paying for a phone, it costs money, it's great that I can get Instagram and, you know, Facebook and these things, but it would be really great if I could take and receive phone calls. And so what they did, after I got off the phone, this is what I'd done. I'd agreed to pay $5 extra a month to have them send me a mobile cell thing that plugged into my internet.
Oh.
Have you heard about this?
No.
I cannot. I'll try and remember what it's called.
But is it like a voice over IP type thing?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah. So you basically turn it on, you register your device as being able to make calls through it. And then when you make a call, when you go to do the ring, the first thing it'll go is beep, 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 which means that you're being routed via your internet, not via the towers that I assume.
This call is being tapped by the internet, by the cloud.
I think I've still got it, actually.
You make phone calls over the cloud.
Bring it in. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Toys.
It's like a phone proxy.
So Branko wants that.
But the phone can't be the size of a truck. So I've been looking at these next generation phones and they're all phablets and it is annoying the hell out of me.
This is classic iPhone problem. I feel all the phones are too big now. Yes, I remember so moving phones from an iPhone, the size of a toothpick and it's too big. I can't see that much screen at once. So I've got tunnel vision.
Moving from an iPhone that fits comfortably in my pocket, I am now looking at a phone that is the size of my tablet. And I need a whole bag to carry it with me wherever I go. That I don't want. I do remember the days where phones were trying to get as small as possible. Now, all of a sudden, it's got to be massive. It's got to be larger than life, like our TVs.
You know what? Actually, I think that for probably older people, like my granddad, he has massive hands. And we specifically bought him.
They used to make them bigger.
Yeah, like, you know, hands? Like 10 years ago, we used to get him a phone that actually has massive keyboards, like, just so you can tap it properly.
There's voice activation now. One you of just those say, Google, notes. Call this person, please.
Yeah.
Okay, Google.
I reckon some people actually enjoy bigger screen. Because they can
not when it doesn't fit in my pocket.
You need bigger pockets, sir. So, Alex, what kind of feature do you want in your next phone?
Well, I've recently, not recently, but like a couple of months ago, updated to Nexus 5. And guess why? Because I've dropped my Nexus 4 on the ground and cracked the screen. But back then, there was not easy replacement, so you may as well buy a new phone. But recently, actually, I've looked up and it's like $100 for a screen, so I've pulled the phone apart, put the new screen on. But it's
interesting story about pulling that phone apart. What happened to the back panel when you were pulling apart your phone?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. They're quite easy to crack. And
you cracked the back panel.
Nexus 4 has the glass back. So while pulling it apart, I've cracked the back screen, which is fine. It's not that functional.
So now he's going to pay another $100 to fix the back of the screen.
Yeah, so
cracked the front of the screen.
with all the quadcopters flying around, I thought it would be good to embed one of those into the phone. As soon as you drop it, it picks up the velocity and just lands nicely on the ground.
I actually think this is a brilliant idea. Apart from the fact that if I had a quadcopter built into my phone, I would be flying it around all the time. Can't get reception? Fly your quadcopter phone up into the sky.
Oh, crap, I have a phone call. Bring it back.
You use your Bluetooth headset and you're fine.
It already has everything.
Except you would crash your quadcopter into everything. James would land it behind a set of wardrobe things. If you were listening last week, James will. James had a little mini quadcopter and he flew it behind a wardrobe that was fixed to the wall and had to fish it out. With a coat hanger.
Can I ask a question? Is this still a is this quadcopter phone still a quadcopter phone that you can put in your pocket?
Yeah, that is another potential problem right there.
It has to be small enough.
Well, not in Branko's pocket.
It's not for flying. It's for hovering and be, you know, just giving that thing to not crack the screen.
What about if the phone just landed on its feet or just turned itself around?
Like a cat.
Like a cat.
We spliced a cat with a phone. But the phone would hate you all the time.
Use a gyroscope. A gyroscope that spins up, turns the phone lands on it.
That's fine if it's in the mud, though.
Don't phones already have gyroscopes?
What if?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but that's for detecting that not. Okay, a gyroscope can be made to turn something, or it can just measure a turn. So you'd have to have a bigger gyroscope. It'd be a big phone, let's just say that.
Well, look, I've never dropped my phone into the loo, but some people did, and I would not want any legs. I would actually to hover inside the loo, not touching the water, because I would not go there.
That's a very specific use case that you have there.
Why don't we put airbags in phones?
Okay, Jeremy, what feature would you like in your next phone?
I don't know, two things. Just getting back to reality. Phones are going to get bigger. I'm talking to Branko. They're just going to get bigger.
They'll have this is coming from a Galaxy Note 3 owner. Everybody, Galaxy Note 3.
It pretty much does everything perfect. It's, I think, the emissions that get me. Samsung, if you're listening, or Android, Google. So I'm running a Samsung version. I'm still running the, you know, what came with the phone.
The Touch Whiz.
The one thing that bothers me is that I don't have like a nice generic undo. It's the one thing I miss from iOS, from my iPhone. Just undo. You know, when you like you type some big long thing and they need to go back a couple of words, and so you hold the back button and then it goes back one character at a time and then it deletes everything.
Yeah, it does.
And you just want to like on an iPhone, you just shake it. And I met someone who worked here last week who didn't know you could shake your iPhone and it would just go back.
It's one of those hidden features
as many times as you
have
want.
To know about.
I've been developing for iOS for a year and a half. I had never heard about it.
You didn't know that? Yeah. Well, that's one of my
favorite. You don't have an iPhone. You don't own one.
Yeah.
Did you know about it, Branko?
Yes, I did.
Ah. So I know you can shake the Google Maps application on Android and it goes, do you have feedback? So I think it's assuming that if you're angry with your phone, you're like throttling it like Homer from The Simpsons. Yeah. And it's like, do you have some feedback? Yeah, I got some feedback. Boy. So you want that undo stack, undo stack.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And also just generically across all of the apps, I think iOS does a great job with getting each app to include features in the same way. So copy and paste is always the same and undo is always the same and that sort of thing. Whereas on Android, everyone gets to do their own thing. I think a lot of them, they can use the normal copy and paste, but a lot of times they just don't. So I'm always hunting around trying to find... You copy from one app and you want to paste into the other. What am I going to click?
Better copy paste
the screen,
APIs.
Do I double tap the screen? Is there something I need to like pull down?
Standard.
Write it down on the piece of paper.
Write it down for each app. How many apps I've got on my phone? Which leads me to the other thing, which I would like to see is maybe just more. I think maybe it's just me and I just know a lot of like geeky people, but I feel like there's a lot more people who are sort of computer savvy enough to maybe want something which they can. Which isn't like so much of a packaged product, which they can sort of tweak more. So what I would like is more like automation building in my phone, so I can like set my phone to automatically turn on my bike tracking app when I'm on my bike. Because you wouldn't believe how often at the same time I get on my bike and ride somewhere in the morning.
Oh, you can do that.
Tasker. I've got to download it in Tasker. I know we talked about Tasker. And I kind of had a bit of a look at it. I just feel like that thing should almost be more built into our operating systems. Like, I don't know why I need to get...
Like an if this, then that almost thing.
Just like, just if I'm opening something up and I could just like hold down, you know, the settings and say, do this whenever. And it's between 8 and 8:30 and... it's a weekday and I'm at home. Just turn this thing on. I'm about to ride to work.
Yeah, you want Tasker. Yeah, but you want Tasker built in.
Yeah, I want to
build nice.
In. I just feel like computers should be a little bit more configurable than they are, because I feel like they're getting dumber. Where are my menus? There's things going missing.
Someone moved my cheese. Don't upgrade to Android L. They're going to move all your cheese. Yeah, for me, I want my phone to be completely... I basically want Project Ara. I want my phone to be completely modular. If I drop it, crack a screen, I want to be able to pull that screen off, just as easy as pulling off a magnet thing, and replace it with a new screen. So, and I want it to work. I've heard early versions of Project Ara are a bit... they had to rewrite a lot of the underlying code for Android to make it work with all the different types of hardware, because Android's actually customized per hardware. And that's why it takes so long to get the new Android versions out, because chipset manufacturers need to write drivers, blah, 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 blah. Mm. So that's what I want. I want Project Ara, but I want it now. And I want it to work perfectly.
Which is the way that we build things. And we spoke about Rails before, where you don't go and, you know, you don't have to go and build a monolithic app, and you don't have to kind of, you know, code everything from scratch. Mm. There's lots of things that you can download that work.
Yeah, like open a modular source. Take this bit that's already been done.
So you can
the wheels
do incredibly technical things that are completely modular
without doing any work at all.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so I want to add a radio to my phone here. I'll just grab this module.
Click radio module. Nice. Click done.
Lego.
Exactly.
Yes. Just Lego-fy my phone.
Because my phone's over a year old, so therefore the battery is more of a potato and less of a battery. And so, yeah, so it'd just be able to go click, take the battery out.
What about all those people that live in those industrial wastelands where they pull apart ICs in Africa?
Ooh.
What would they do then?
I don't know.
They wouldn't have as much rubbish to deal with.
They'd be happy.
They'd be like, took our gerbs.
Yeah, on the battery thing, the batteries these days, we used to be in the old phones, you just take the cover from, take the battery out and put the new one in.
Yeah.
That was a feature on the early
Android. It's like you can change the battery, and now they've just slowly all gone.
Yeah, Nexus 4 inside. Apparently,
I think Samsung is still pushing it.
You know?
Yeah, which is good.
But I don't need to, because my battery lasts for 2 days.
that's good.
Why would I change it?
Nexus 4 battery inside, it's very pliable. It's really hard to stick it out. Like,
it is a lot like a potato.
They're using double layer sticky tape there, and when I was pulling it out, it's like bent halfway.
Yeah, they glue them in.
So they really make it hard there.
All right, cool. So, guys, we just did a podcast. Sweet. Yay! Woo! Hooray! So,
rock and roll.
I think we covered most of everything. I think you can go back now and you know what a middleware is. You know what that spinning little loading guy means. It means it's talking to the cloud where your plumbing lives. See?
There you know who to think about when stuff isn't working.
Yeah, if it's
or
not
when
working.
It is working. That'd be great.
Yeah.
People called me up and said, Jerem, I just noticed I haven't thought about you. Just,
you can call Jerem on 04 and just thank him. Thanks, my middleware works. Cool. All right. Who wants to do a Twitter handle? One of the new guys, Jerem or Branko. Who's going to put their hand up? Branko.
Oh, damn it.
You kind of pointed at Jerem. That means you're doing it.
Bloody
So what's our Twitter handle, Branko?
What is it?
Outware.
It's at outwear.
Yeah, spell outwear for the people.
O-U-W-T. No.
Wait.
Gotcha there. No, it's at outwear. So your funky little A in the circle. O-U-T-W-A-R-E.
It's hard, isn't it? Like to spell a word that you know on a podcast. It's difficult. That's why I can't talk. Sweet. Join us next time, won't you? Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye.